The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
All right. It's a Thursday. Welcome to it. I am Nicole Sandler, and we've got a busy, busy show for you today. Usually on Thursdays, Howie Klein is here, but he is battling a flu or just getting over it. So we've had to fill his slot, and we will nicely, I think. You'll appreciate what we've got coming up in the second half hour. But as usual, in the first half hour of the show, we go over the news of the day. And I don't know that this is necessarily news, but coming off the Emmys, Julia Louis-Dreyfus tweeted out today, 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. Today I am the one. Oh, boy. And then she continued, the good news is that I have the most glorious group of supportive and caring family and friends and fantastic insurance through my union. The bad news is that not all women are so lucky. So let's fight all cancers and make universal health care a reality. That comes, of course, on the heels of the news that this latest incarnation of Republican attempts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act has failed. And just yesterday, Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy, along with Mitch McConnell and others from the Republican Senate caucus, took to the microphones to say they don't have the votes. So what the hell was Donald Trump talking about yesterday when he said...
Well, Pete, the health care bill didn't go down. We have the votes.
No, you don't.
But reconciliation is a disaster. But as you know, it ends on Friday.
It's a disaster?
So we don't have enough time because right. We have one senator who's a yes vote, a great person, but he's in the hospital.
Huh?
And he's a yes vote. So we can't do it by Friday. So we have the votes. We will do it sometime at the beginning of the year, but prior to the election in November.
Okay. First of all, they have until Saturday, which is the 30th, but and Congress often works on weekends. No, I know not when they don't have to, but they do occasionally. But what was he talking about? So that was in an interview with Fox. Later on, he went, as he was leaving, to go to Indianapolis to make his big tax reform speech. Before he got on Marine One, he was talking to reporters and he said it over and over again. Whoops, he said this over and over, this over and over again.
We have the votes for health care. We have one senator that's in the hospital.
What?
He can't vote because he's in the hospital.
Who?
He can't vote because he's in the hospital.
No.
We have two other votes that are coming and we will have them. I feel we have the votes. I'm almost certain we have the votes, but with one man in the hospital, we cannot display that we have them. We have the votes.
Oh, my God.
We can't do it now because we have somebody in a hospital. In other words, he can't come here and vote because he's in the hospital. Let me just say, yes, in the hospital. One of our yes votes is in the hospital. I can't take him out of the hospital.
One of your 49 yes votes is in the hospital. But last night, Chris Hayes refuted that.
An hour or so after the president repeatedly claimed that a senator was in the hospital, Senator Thad Cochran, who, according to his office, had recently been treated for a urological issue, tweeted, and I quote, "Thanks for the well wishes. I'm not hospitalized, but I am recuperating at home in Mississippi and look forward to returning to work soon." Well, that's pretty definitive. So Trump was wrong to declare 9 times today that a Republican yes vote was hospitalized. He was also entirely wrong to claim the Republicans had enough votes on health care. At an event in Indianapolis this afternoon, the president stopped repeating one of those blatant falsehoods.
Okay.
We have the votes.
No, you don't.
On Graham Cassidy.
No, you don't.
But with the rules of reconciliation, we're up against a deadline of Friday, 2 days.
Saturday, but who's counting?
That's just 2 days.
Three. But, okay.
And yes vote, Senator, we have a wonderful senator, great, great senator, who is a yes vote, but he's home recovering from a pretty tough situation.
Okay. And shortly after that, I thought I had Chris Hayes saying Thad Cochran was the senator. And moments later, he tweeted out, I'm not not hospitalized, recovering from a, I believe a urological, I couldn't tell if he was saying neurological or urological, and on repeated listens, it sure sounded like urological to me, but what do I know? Something. And so, he's like, not in the hospital. I'm home recovering. So there you have it. Donald Trump, in addition to being delusional, is also, you know, a huge liar. So it wasn't only Chris Hayes who called him out about it, but Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel did it the best last night.
It has been a bad week for Donald Trump, but he's not one to admit defeat. He was full of both B and S today at the White House. He even tried to claim they have the votes to beat Obamacare.
I just wanted to say, though, on health care, we have the votes for health care.
No, you don't, but go on.
We have one senator that's in the hospital. He can't vote because he's in the hospital. I'm almost certain we have the votes, but with one man in the hospital, we cannot display that we have them. We have the votes. We can't do it now because we have somebody in a hospital.
Yeah, we heard that already.
What senator are you referring to?
We don't
have any votes. They're all asking who? What? Which senator?
He doesn't know who's in the hospital. Somebody's in the hospital. Okay? Why do you keep asking? He's in the hospital. So the senator whose name he couldn't come up with is Thad Cochran of Mississippi, who moments after that comment tweeted, "Thanks for the well wishes. I'm not hospitalized, but I'm recuperating at home in Mississippi and look forward to returning to work soon." There was no senator in the hospital. And even if he was, there were still at least three other Republicans who were against the bill, which means Graham Cassidy wouldn't have passed whether he's in the hospital or not. So just to recap, Mr. President, there was no senator in the hospital. You didn't have the votes. The bill didn't pass. And you're bad at math. Okay?
All those things. All those things. Right. So good on you, Jimmy Kimmel. He's on fire lately. Guess he's trying to steal some of Stephen Colbert's anti-Trump thunder. But Jimmy Kimmel got it on health care. So, you know, despite Donald Trump lying about the fact that they don't have enough votes, or they would not have canceled the vote. If they had the votes, believe me, they would have been voting on it. They don't have the votes. That's not to say that they can't get them shortly into 2018 and that they won't try again, because you know they will. But at this moment, they do not have the votes, or they would have been voting on it. I promise you that. So while the rest of the Republican world has moved from trying to kill Obamacare, at least for now, onto tax reform, Donald Trump went to Indianapolis yesterday to speak on his tax reform issue. Here's what he said his tax plan would include.
It'll be the largest reduction in terms of dollars of any plan ever in the history of the country, and it's going to be something very special. But it's really for the middle income people, and
no,
it's
isn't.
For the working people, and
no,
it's
it
the
isn't.
Jobs.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. In fact, David K. Johnston was on the TV yesterday. Here's what David K. Johnston says about this tax plan.
When people realize what's happening to their individual tax rates, they're really going to go crazy. Instead of 10% and then 15%, it's going to be 12% and then more than double to 25%. I'm sorry, this is a middle class tax cut. Now, they didn't give us any numbers on where these would apply, but they keep saying $24,000 of income for a married couple, you won't pay any tax on it. Well, currently, you don't pay any on $19,000, so that's not much of a shift. This is absolutely a massive giveaway program for Donald Trump, and had it been in effect the year that I got his tax return for, 2005, it would be an 85% reduction in Donald Trump's taxes.
85% reduction in Donald Trump's taxes. That's because the alternative minimum tax would be repealed. And during that, in that 2005 tax return, the only one we've seen, that's how he paid taxes. He paid the alternative minimum tax. 85% reduced if this thing goes through. Now, they're going to do this under reconciliation, too, which Donald Trump says is a mess. Because he doesn't understand what reconciliation means. He doesn't understand any of it. He just doesn't get it. Like he doesn't get Puerto Rico. In fact, we'll get into all of that when we check in with the latest news. In fact, let's do that. Coming up today, I mentioned we don't have Howie Klein today. He's out sick. We will have Jason Sattler, who you know better as at LOLGOP on the Twitters, I read a column that he wrote in USA Today. Little did I know he was a writer and not just somebody who's really, really good on Twitter. So we'll talk to him, and we'll talk to an old friend of the show, Derek Crow, who's running for Congress from the Austin, Texas area. So we got a busy show for you. So let's check in with the latest news, shall we?
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The president on Wednesday went to Indianapolis to push what Republicans are calling the biggest tax overhaul in three decades.
We're here today in Indiana to announce our framework to deliver historic tax relief to the American people. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and I guess it's probably something I could say that I'm very good at. I've been waiting for this for a long time. We're going to cut taxes for the middle class, make the tax code simpler and more fair for everyday Americans, and we are going to bring back the jobs and wealth that have left our country, and most people thought left our country for good. We want tax reform that is pro-growth, pro-jobs, pro-worker, pro-family, and yes, tax reform that is pro-American.
Trump called the plan historic tax relief to the American people. It would lower corporate income taxes, cut taxes for small businesses, reduce the top income tax bracket for individuals, and scrap some widely used tax breaks, including one that benefits people in high-tax states dominated by Democrats. On MSNBC Thursday morning, former Obama advisor Steve Rattner pushed back on Trump's pronouncement that he personally would not be helped by the plan and that it would benefit the middle class.
One, it does little or nothing for individual taxpayers, a lot for business. Two, it would significantly increase the national debt. And three, it is really, really bad news for blue states, New York, Connecticut, California, that have high state and local taxes. And so on average, and these are all very rough early numbers because they haven't actually released all the details, but on average, individual Americans, in fact, would have a small tax increase, but certainly no tax decrease, while business still has $2.5 trillion of tax cuts. So basically $2.2 trillion of net tax cuts, all of it going to business.
On Thursday morning, after being pressed by officials from Puerto Rico and D.C. politicians, Trump temporarily waived the Jones Act restrictions that ban foreign shipping between American ports, which should help get fuel, water, and medical supplies to the U.S. territory devastated by Hurricane Maria last week.
And this morning, we have a bit of breaking news on the hurricane response in Puerto Rico. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders just tweeting moments ago that the administration has decided to lift or suspend the Jones Act. This is a 100-year-old law that requires supplies being carried between U.S. ports to be carried on U.S. ships. A number of Democratic members of Congress had called on the administration to waive that rule for now, at least for a year they wanted, in order to try to get supplies more quickly to the island territory.
Puerto Rico's Governor Ricardo Rosello explains the challenges they're facing.
What we are seeing right now is the biggest event of devastation in the modern history of Puerto Rico. It's a perfect storm, if you will. The grid is completely out. Obviously, a lot of things depend on energy. Telecoms is down. Radio is mostly down in the area. We are an island, so assets are harder to bring by. The air traffic is clogged, so the quantity, the bandwidth of airplanes that's coming here is lower. So what we need is really all hands on deck, and we make that plea. But also to make sure that in the aid package, Puerto Rico is considered equally, that we get the funding that's necessary to rebuild, that we get the flexibility because of Puerto Rico's fiscal situation. We're going to need some money to operate a government and to operate the emergency that we, quite frankly, don't have in the box, and that we get a 100% waiver. The president signed a 100% waiver for 6 months, but this is going to be a long rebuilding process.
Trump's not happy about it.
Sounds right. You spent a lot of money on that charter plane. Is that cool?
I was looking into it, and I will look into it, and I will tell you personally, I'm not happy about it. I am not happy
about it. You're going to fire him and do about it, Mr. President.
I'm going to look at it. I am not happy about it, and I'll let him know.
He asked about Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price's pricey proclivity for using private charter jets for his travel. The president offered no specifics other than to say he's not happy about it. When asked if he'd fire Price, he responded, "We'll see." The House Oversight Committee launched an investigation into Price's and other senior government officials' travels. The Health and Human Services Department's Inspector General has also launched a probe. Quinnipiac is out with new poll numbers, and Donald Trump isn't faring very well.
Asked in a Quinnipiac University poll whether Donald Trump is, quote, fit to serve as president, a majority, 56%, say no. 42% say he is. This as his job approval ticked up 1 point from August, now at 36% who approve, 57 disapprove. On the issues, Americans have slightly favorable views of his handling of the economy and terrorism, with approval at 48 and 47% for each issue. But about 6 in 10 Americans disapprove of his job performance on other major issues. 38% approve of him on both foreign policy and immigration, and 34% approve on environment and health care.
And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution, as our work is 100% listener funded. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
All right, a little more news as we await Ellen Ratner, who I think forgot about us again. Speedbird 9 in the chat room just wrote, "Did anyone hear that the administration is restricting travel to Puerto Rico by members of Congress?" Yes, they are. And if you wonder why, let me share with you a small a clip from Congresswoman Velasquez of New York, whose district, I guess, includes a number of Puerto Ricans as well, a huge Puerto Rican population in New York City, who just returned from Puerto Rico and is talking about how bad things are there.
I traveled to Puerto Rico last Friday, and I can say the situation was shocking. Those images were burned into my mind. Yet, what I also saw was inspiring. The spirit of the Puerto Rican people who refuse to quit, who will not give up, and who want to get back to rebuilding the island they love. Unfortunately, this administration's response has been inexcusably slow and ineffective. Yesterday, I was proud that more than 140 of my colleagues joined me in writing to the president and asking for some basic, tangible steps to improve the situation. Now, we need to start focusing on Congress. Today, we're asking Speaker Ryan to bring legislation to the floor to help relieve Puerto Rico's suffering. We need a measure that will provide supplemental funding, just as we acted after Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. And we are going to need funds for community development block grants to rebuild. Puerto Rico's electrical grid was basically destroyed. We will need federal resources for energy repair, and we will need funding for greater security. There will be environmental concerns to address, with Puerto Rico having 14 Superfund sites. Now, let me add, there are also medical emergencies happening right now in Puerto Rico. But Puerto Rico's healthcare system was eroding long before Maria. Medicaid funding is due to run out if Congress doesn't act.
So that's Congresswoman Velazquez of New York. And you can hear the emotion in her voice. She just got back from Puerto Rico and she's saying things there are really bad, really bad. But all you hear from Trump is, oh, we're doing a great job. You can almost hear him say a heck of a job, except he's from New York. So he wouldn't say heck of a. He'd say hell of a because he's, you know, more vulgar than even Bush was, which is, you know, saying a lot. And there's more bad news that comes with it. You heard the good news that the Jones Act had been suspended, as they did for Texas and Florida in the wake of Harvey and Irma. Well, here's the fine print. Suspended for 10 days. 10 days. Trump only wants good news. He doesn't want bad news reports. But there's more good news. But Linear Bob is asking, where's our military? They're taking over. I guess the official announcement hasn't been made yet. But the U.S. Army will take over recovery operations in Puerto Rico. This according to Jorge Santini of Puerto Rico's National Guard State Command. He told the Daily Beast the announcement is expected sometime this afternoon. Let's see. U.S. Northern Command appointed Army Brigadier General Richard Kim on Wednesday to oversee operations. The Army will oversee every facet of the massive mission and coordinate with the National Guard, FEMA, and Governor Ricardo Rossello's office. According to Santini, approximately 2,600 U.S. military personnel and guard members are currently involved in Hurricane Maria relief efforts. They need more. Whatever it is, they need more. The images coming from there are just heinous. And when you, they're horrendous. And when you hear the people speaking, they're out of food, they're out of water, they're out of gasoline. And they're out of money. You know, there's no electricity. And so the computer systems are down. So the ATMs, the few that are working, now they're limiting withdrawals to $100 a piece instead of $500. Everything's being done by cash because nobody has electricity to put credit card transactions through. I mean, it's a race against time. And these poor people are suffering. The airport, which is only slightly open, is going to shut down on Tuesday because Trump is coming to visit. You know, they've already had, you know, with ships coming in, there's images of ships sitting in the at the port. Only one of the three ports is open and somewhat open, but the trucks can't get to them. So there's been relief supplies sitting there at the port since Saturday. And something's got to be done. And all Trump does is talk about what a great job he's doing and how the governor and the mayor of San Juan has thanked him. Because if they didn't thank him, he'd you know, write them off. He'd say they're ungrateful and they don't appreciate all the work we're doing for them. This is a huge, huge disaster, as bad as Houston is. And people are still suffering in Houston. In fact, we're going to speak with Derek Crow a little later on. Now, he's running for Congress from Texas's, I think, 21st district, which is not Houston, but the Austin, Texas area. But I'm sure he can speak to the fact that they're having real trouble there. And look, since then, we've had two more major disasters. We had Irma here in Florida, which, although my part of Florida got by relatively unscathed, I mean, we had down power lines, we had down trees. Most of us got off pretty easily and very luckily, as I knock on the wood laminate. Other parts of Florida were not so lucky. Marco Island, I understand, is still without power and still weeks away from power. The Fort Myers area got hit hard. You know, the Keys, of course, are just in real, real dire straits. None of it compares to what's going on in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And it's a virtual blackout from the government. Media is doing their job. They're all going down there now that they can get in, and they're reporting on it. Some of them are flying in with the relief agencies. Some, I guess, are going in on commercial flights. But, yeah, the government needs to do more. We're going to see the death toll rise precipitously. It's really, really sad. Trying to think if there's any other news. Playboy founder Hugh Hefner died. That's okay. The Jones Act waived again. What they're not reporting is that it was only waived for 10 days. So the ships can come in for 10 days. But if there are no trucks able to get to the ships to offload the supplies, I don't know what good it's going to do. And 10 days goes by like that. The Trump tax plan, we talked about a little bit, and we'll talk about it some more in a few minutes. Yeah, Jared Kushner's company got sued by two Baltimore area tenants who filed a class action lawsuit against companies owned by the president's son-in-law, although he allegedly had to back away from the businesses in order to work in the White House. He's still part of the family. A complaint alleges that the company charges illegal and excessive fees when a tenant is late with rent. There you go. We know that Jared Kushner and five others in the White House use private email accounts. Mm-hmm. Supreme Court opens for business on Monday. They're going to hear three cases wrapped into one. Oh, and by the way, speaking of the Supreme Court, let me see if I can find this real quickly. Of course, I lost it. Neil Gorsuch gave a speech today at the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. to a group who was brought up. Oh, let me see. Oh God, I got to find it because it was so perfectly hypocritical for this administration. And of course, now I'm not able to find it. A group who has funded a case that's coming up in front of the Supreme Court has paid for this luncheon where Neil Gorsuch is speaking today at the Trump Hotel, which is a huge conflict of interest, should be a huge conflict of interest. This is the world we live in right now. All right. You know, I got time for a quick phone call. Hi, who's this?
Hey, it's me, Tamara. Puerto Rico also has dozens and dozens of pharmaceutical factories, so Americans all over the country are going to start dying when they run out of their medication.
Yeah, you know what? I believe they had a mass exodus of those manufacturers. I think most of the pharmaceutical manufacturers left Puerto Rico and moved back either to the mainland or moved to other countries.
Actually, they were talking about it this morning on the news.
Oh, really? Okay, well, I'm sure there are still some there.
Electricity down there.
They have no electricity. You know, all of their agriculture is wiped out. One farmer said, as far as he could see, everything is flattened. So that you know, they're every yeah. so
they got nothing.
They got nothing.
They got nothing.
It's really horrific.
And Trump's giving them nothing.
Yeah. Except lip service, talking about what a great job he's doing and why nobody has called him out for his brownie moment yet. He may not have said heck of a job, but he's done everything but physically pat himself on the back.
Well, Mueller, his Waterloo is coming up very soon.
Yes.
Let's hope.
Okay, Tamara.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
I just wanted to mention the drug manufacturer.
I hear you. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah,
bye.
Well, I guess one of the few industries still there, although, you know, not in as bigger numbers as they used to be. I guess we can put it that way. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with LOLGOP, a man whose real name is Jason Sattler, who has a piece in USA Today, well, yesterday anyway, called How Much Should We Raise Taxes on the Rich? We'll talk to him next. It's the Nicole Sandler Show, NicoleSandler.com, and on the Progressive Voices Network.
Rather than a healthcare system, our country's leaders have kept us shackled to a corporate care system, allowing insurance giants, drug company gougers, hospital chains, and other profiteers to ration our care based on whether a family can pay whatever outrageous price the corporations demand to maintain their exorbitant profits. While the guiding ethic of physicians, nurses, and other caregivers is first, do no harm, the corporate owners of the system impose a contrary ethic. First, maximize our profits. Thus, despite Americans spending some $3.2 trillion a year on health care, more than any other country in the world, 28 million of our people have no health coverage. Tens of millions are so underinsured that they can't use the policy they're paying for. One out of five adults can't afford prescription drugs they need. Our people are less healthy than other advanced nations. For example, the U.S. ranks 42nd in life expectancy, and CEOs and top shareholders of the system are hauling off multiple millions of dollars each. Can't we do better than that? Of course we can, if we start treating healthcare as a human right rather than a corporate profit center. And doing this doesn't require a whole new complex system. Congress can just extend America's successful Medicare program to every man, woman, and child in our country. This egalitarian Medicare for All idea would deliver comprehensive care, be much easier for patients to navigate, and be far cheaper than today's rip-off system. At last, a hospital stay would not bankrupt a family. People would not avoid going to the doctor because they can't afford it. Prescription drugs would be affordable, and workers would not be stuck in bad jobs just to get basic health coverage. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about Medicare for All, go to BernieSanders.com/Medicare for All.
If you'd like more of Jim Hightower's real populism, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter gives you the real lowdown on which corporations, by name, are doing what to the middle class, our environment, and our democracy. Each month, the Hightower Lowdown brings you facts you didn't know, along with actions you can take to fight back. It also comes with a sense of humor. Hightower believes we can fight the gods and still have fun. Plus, get this, it's cheap. Only $15 brings you 12 issues a year. For real populism, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
All right, I'm back. So I'm looking at the editorial page of USA Today yesterday, and I noticed a headline that stood out to me. It read, "How much should we raise taxes on the rich?" And so I read it. It was a great column written by Jason Sattler, whose name I didn't recognize. But then at the bottom, it said, Jason Sattler, a.k.a. LOL GOP. Who, you know, I did recognize because he's one of my favorite Twitter accounts. And I thought, well, let me check in with Jason and see if he'd be willing to come on the show and talk to us. And and yes, he did. Yes, he is. Jason, you there?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I love at LOL GOP. You have one of the
That's
best.
That's so nice of you to say.
Well,
thanks.
You've only got about a million followers. Not quite a million, but you're up there. You've got hundreds of thousands of followers.
It could round up from 300,000. It could round up. Sure, I'll take it.
Right. Ah, that works. So in your day job, you write meaningful columns like this one that I read at USA Today, huh?
Yeah, I've been doing that for about a year, and when they're meaningful, that's always a plus. So thanks for sharing it.
Well, sure. Now the headline. I know you don't. The people who write the columns don't write the headline,
yeah.
but they got you good on this one. How much should we raise taxes on the rich? Because that grabbed me. Because we should be raising taxes on the rich. Certainly not lowering them. And there's a paragraph that really stood out to me in this column. You wrote, in a sane world, say, for instance, Scandinavia, we'd be debating how much more we should tax those who can afford it most to ensure those who can afford health care the least. Doing the exact opposite would likely make our crisis of monstrous economic inequality even worse. And that seems to be the Trump plan, if there is a Trump plan. So in reality, there's not even a Trump plan. There's like a 6 or 7 page outline, right?
Right. Right. And it seems that, you know, and today Gary Cohn, or the guy who's pushing it from the White House, says it's not only the opening offer, it's the final offer. So,
oh, really?
It's so vague, yet it's final offer from the White House.
Unbelievable. And they keep going around saying how this is a middle class tax cut when every expert, every economist that I've heard talk about it say in no way. It's if you even look at the three tax brackets they narrow it down to, it's a huge increase on middle income people.
Yeah, especially families with kids. It's really going to hurt families with kids, and then it's even going to raise taxes on some seniors. And it's poorly planned. In addition to being at least 50% weighted towards the richest 1%, it's going to be incredibly difficult for them to defend because it puts it ends a tax break that's huge in the local state taxes are deductible. They're taking that away, which is going to kill New York and California, where most of the vulnerable Republicans are. So it's a crazy plan to be taking up after this huge legislative defeat they just suffered with repeal.
And the other thing they're doing is they want to pass this under the same... Sorry, my phone keeps ringing. Let me turn this off.
Popular, yeah.
I don't know. Someone's trying to get a hold of me. They're trying to do this under reconciliation as well, so that the same reason that they couldn't get this done, and the reason that John McCain objected to it, is because they tried to jam it through with just, you know, only Republican votes. And McCain already said if they do it the same way, he'll vote against this one as well.
Yeah, and I am actually concerned about their ability, you know, because if there's one thing Republicans are willing to come together for, you know, they'll throw their grandmothers on, make a human bridge out of their grandparents and walk it through it to get tax breaks for the rich. So this is like, this is the reason they exist. So I really do not doubt their ability to pull this off. But it does seem like they're making so many of the same mistakes that they just made that it's almost like they're daring this to fall apart in record time.
It's really unbelievable. And mostly the lies that they tell, the way they lie with such impunity, you know, if you read the so many pages they put out, 7 or 8 pages, it's kind of clear that this does nothing to help middle-class people. I mean, and for Donald Trump to say this won't help me at all, I guess it's second nature to him. And his voters are happy to go along with the lies.
That's actually, you complimented the title of my column, but I was actually thinking over the day, maybe the article should have been called, you know, how much should we raise Donald Trump and his kids' taxes? Because that really is he is the perfect example of why we need to be raising taxes and why this tax cut is so bad. He, for instance, gets rid of the alternative minimum tax, which is the only reason he paid any taxes, almost any taxes at all, in the one tax year that we saw he returns for.
That's right.
So it's very specifically designed to help and benefit people like him that pay most of their taxes through pass-through or as posing as small businesses. And that's what we're going to hear a ton of, that this cut supposedly helps small business and it helps like a farmer who has to sell his farm. And there's almost no examples of these things actually existing, but they pull well. So the lies are at least geared towards some reality in the sense they recognize that their actual policies are incredibly unpopular.
Right. And, you know, this also repeals the estate tax, which they like to call the death tax, which is not a death tax at all. It's an estate tax, and it affects the smallest number of people imaginable. In fact, it exempts the first, I want to say, isn't like $5 million or $50 million of an estate. It's something, right? It's something crazy.
I think it's $5 million for an individual, and I think $10 million for a married couple. And I think actually, you know, there's been a really great framing on the right by calling this a death tax, even though it only affects 0.2% of Americans. I think it was 80 families last year that were affected by this. And even the estate tax kind of undersells. It's an inheritance tax in the sense that the only people who are ever going to pay this are the people who pay are going to get magically huge inheritances, which I guess we all like to imagine we are. But the percentages of Americans that actually get an inheritance that is enough to afford a private jet the way the Trump family will is so small as to be just irrelevant, and it ultimately eliminate $35 or something like $40 billion a year from the budget, which would be about half as much as we could spend to give almost all Americans free college tuition.
That's amazing. See, they tell us we can't afford that. They tell us we can't afford Medicare for all, yet tax cuts for the rich, when they want to do it, they don't pay for it. The last time we had a big tax cut was under George W. Bush, and he did that, and he put 2 wars on the credit card as well without paying for them. And they claim that the Democrats are the ones who are fiscally irresponsible.
Well, we knew that they blew the last surplus that they would have left, and we also knew that the last tax increase on the rich led to the largest the longest economic expansion in American history. So all of their arguments about taxes are so unpopular. But what they are incredibly popular for is rallying GOP donors, which we know is the kind of the obsession of the party, because it's Republican and conservative politics are so profitable. As to you can really, if you reward donors, you can make a great living, not just as a Republican politician, but afterwards when you're working as a lobbyist, like whatever Rick Santorum was doing, trying to pass an ACA repeal years after being irrelevant.
Right. And, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something I haven't even talked about, is that Rick Santorum was the impetus behind Graham Cassidy.
That's what we learned, I guess, you know. We kept wondering why we were seeing him there. And I first, you know, I just have to say straight up, I don't know who was paying him. I'm just assuming someone is paying him because, you know, his only other employment is talking on CNN, and I just, it is based on his history. You know, why did he get involved with this except for his passion for uninsuring poor people? But Lindsey Graham says, yeah, they were at, the Capitol Hill, a barbershop, and he brought up this idea. He said, let's do it like we did welfare reform, which, you know, it's not a great moment in Democratic Party history, but it was the model that they decided to go to, which basically throw it to the states and let them reinvent what it means to do health care in America in 2 years, even though in 4 years it was almost a miracle that we pulled it off with Obamacare.
It really is. It really is. We're speaking with Jason Sattler, better known to us as at LOLGOP. I don't know if you know, but on Tuesdays, Gotta Laugh is my regular guest. She's been on with me every Tuesday for a long time.
She's great.
And she's awesome. And she does a thing called her Tweet Spot, where, you know, she combs through Twitter and finds some of the best tweets out there. And you play a huge role in our show. So, you know, I was excited when I saw it. It's like, oh, this is LOLGOP writing this column. So what else is on your mind? I've been marveling over Trump's patting his own back on Puerto Rico and what a great job he's doing, and wondering why no one has called him out for his brownie moment, because obviously they're not doing a great job in Puerto Rico. The people down there are suffering horrendously.
Right, and there's something like 9,000 containers that were sitting at the docks, and finally today, Trump, you know, I think what this shows us about Trump is we can pressure Trump into doing almost anything as long as it is on cable news often enough. And
right.
What this took is it took 8 or 9 days of being on CNN before he decided that this was a national emergency worth actually acting on. And Brian Schatz, who's a U.S. senator from Hawaii, pointed out President Obama's reaction to the earthquake that led to the Fukushima meltdown and how quickly the United States acted in that instance. And here we have a U.S. territory that we knew for 5 days was about to be decimated by a hurricane, and it took a week of finally Anderson Cooper had to get down there before Trump could actually be bothered to care about this.
It's amazing. But you know what they did? So they lifted the Jones Act so that the let ships go in with supplies. But what the little known factoid here is they only lifted it for 10 days.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, yes, 10 days.
Yeah. And the guy who did the Katrina response is pointing out that this is maybe a fraction of what was going on in Katrina, in the sense that we don't even really understand how bad this is yet.
No. And the thing is, we were completely not hearing anything about Houston anymore. I'm down in Florida. Luckily, I'm in a place, you know, I'm in the suburb of Fort Lauderdale, where we got very, very lucky. But there are still places in Texas and here in Florida, the Keys, for example, that are suffering as well. But it's nothing close to what's going on in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. And it's almost as if Trump didn't realize that those are U.S. citizens down there. Or maybe he knows and just doesn't care because they can't vote.
He has a long history of not understanding that non-white people can be American citizens. It's kind of that's his whole brand, is to birther anyone. I mean, this is really, like, to me, this is all kind of a strain of birtherism. A sense that only rich white men's concerns are really worth tackling in a radically quick fashion. And he understood with Texas and Florida, because he has rich white donors who live in those areas, that he at least had to make the appearance that he really cared about this. And we'll see what actually the follow-through is on this. But on Puerto Rico, he felt absolutely no pressure to get involved in this until, like we were saying, you know, he can see it on TV and realize that this wasn't going away.
Right. Now, the other news from today, which I don't even know if it's been made official yet or not, is that the Army is going to take over the operations for Maria recovery in Puerto Rico, I guess the Virgin Islands as well, which can only help. I mean, they need somebody in charge who can get in there and clear the roads, because you mentioned the 9,000 containers or such that have been sitting there since Saturday, and they can't get the trucks to them, and they can't get drivers to drive the trucks because they have no phone service on the island. This is how bad it is, and people are, you know, without water and food.
Yeah, and I hope that people start to recognize that Hillary Clinton had a tweet out and a suggestion of what he should have done and did it 5 days ago. U.S. senators today listed a 20 different actions that they could Trump could take. It's like this guy needs a tutor in how to be president. And you know, we're supposedly he's supposedly surrounded by these really competent generals that are telling him what to do. But there is a certain amount of knowledge and just interest that the president has to have. And if the president isn't interested and he's not trying to solicit the information, or he is more interested in calling Jerry Jones from the owner of the Dallas Cowboys four times about players protesting, then he is then he's interested in a million Americans in Puerto Rico being without drinking water. You just can't make him do it. You know, it's a literal. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him care about making sure Puerto Ricans can have a drink of water. You know, this is the real example of how dangerous it is to elect someone who has no serious interest in governing.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And then the only way to make him do it is by shaming him into it with bad press. Because if there's one thing Donald Trump doesn't want, it's bad press, bad ratings, bad reviews. That's the only thing he pays attention to. So I guess you're right. It was Anderson Cooper going down there and more coverage on TV about this humanitarian crisis. And I guess that's what we need. It would be nice if, you know, instead of him talking about how the governor of Puerto Rico and the mayor of San Juan are thanking him for the great job they're doing, I understand if they have, why they have, because it's, you know, the only way to get him to do anything for you is to flatter him. Hopefully he's getting the message, or someone there is getting the message, and these people will get the help they need.
Yeah, it really is the first kind of real example of this being a no joke. You know, at all. You know, when he's making it could have happened any time before. You know, he almost. And there's also other things going on that are completely washed off the table when we don't have a real serious conversation going on, and we're kind of obsessed with these race baiting stunts that he's doing. You know, 9 million American kids are about to lose their health care because CHIP hasn't been renewed, because the Republicans put that aside to try to pursue an empty repeal. So, you know, there's the lack of interest in government, being interested in government is a real detriment to American people, and we're still, you know, only 9 months into it.
Jason Sattler, we know him as LOLGOP on Twitter. He's a contributor to USA Today. I'm going to post a link to your piece that was in yesterday's paper, How Much Should We Raise the Taxes on the Rich, on my blog, along with today's podcast. Jason, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to meet you, and hopefully I can call on you again.
Anytime.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You have a good
pleasure
day.
Pleasure talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And there, you know, I outed him, Jason Sattler. But I figured if it was in the newspaper, then, you know, I'm not the only one who knows it. All right. I told you we have a busy day today. And I also wanted to speak with someone who's running for Congress. You know, we talk with Howie Klein usually on Thursdays. Howie's out sick today. And so we decided to check in with one of his Blue America endorsees, and Derek Crow is actually an old friend of the show's. Derek used to be on from time to time when we'd talk about Afghanistan, because he worked with at Brave New Films on the Rethink Afghanistan project, and now he's running for Congress from Texas' 21st congressional district. Hey, Derek Crow, how are you doing?
I'm great, Nicole. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's good to talk to you. I was so excited when Howie Klein told me that you were running. I got very happy.
Howie's great, and I tell you, the guy that is currently in the seat for this congressional district is so offensive that I could not run this year.
Now, Austin is a very progressive town. It's college town. It's the one town in Texas that I would ever even consider living in, and it's a great music town as well, which is why I love it so much. But have they gerrymandered your district so that someone like, and I'm blanking on his name, the sitting congressman there who you're running against can get in?
Yes, he's been there for about 30 years. Ooh. And the reason that Lamar Smith is in Congress is that they essentially punish Austin for being a progressive bastion in Texas. Austin has several members of Congress that have broken the city up. And my district essentially takes in southern Austin from about 6th Street south along the I-35 corridor into northeast San Antonio. And then it sweeps across and essentially encompasses the entire Hill Country. And so that pulls in a lot of Republican voters. And traditionally, this district has been rated a safe district for Lamar Smith, but we have some great dynamics cutting our way this year that we think mean he's vulnerable and we can take him this year.
Well, good. I hope so. Hey, I know you are in Austin, so you weren't directly impacted by Hurricane Harvey. Although you did get a lot of rain and wind. I mean, we saw the size of that storm and how it sat on Texas for so long. And I know you were impacted. I was just speaking with someone about, you know, the lack of response in Puerto Rico, how Trump keeps patting himself on the back and taking so-called compliments for the great job they're doing down there. But when we see footage of the island and we hear from people who are living there, they're suffering and people are dying for lack of water and food and gasoline and diesel and hospitals. What's the latest in Houston? Because, since I'm here in Florida and Irma hit and then Maria hit Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, we're not hearing much out of Houston anymore.
Well, it's because it's so hard to keep up with the pace of natural disasters that are hitting us, partially fueled by climate change. In Houston, I mean, the situation has been pretty bad. I mean, the hard part we're having at the state level is that our governor, Greg Abbott, is refusing to tap the rainy day fund, which I don't know why you can't consider the largest rain event in American history to be an excuse to tap your state's rainy day fund. But that goes to the heart of what Republicans want from the government. They don't want any money spent on human needs right now. They want to give it all to the top 1%. Wow. So out of Houston, you saw an incredible amount of storm damage. You saw 50 inches of rain fall in just a few days. That was absolutely devastating. I know folks who are still out of their homes. There are folks having trouble getting, you know, aid from both the government or charitable organizations. And a lot of that's from the simple fact that it devastated the city. And when you look towards the larger scope of things and you look at things like the devastation in Puerto Rico, you can just see that Republicans are making sure that we absolutely know that they're going to put profits over people. They've refused to lift import restrictions on Puerto Rico until just today. We've heard the Trump administration may be considering that.
And did you hear they're only doing it for 10 days?
It really shows you that they're going to put profits over people every time. And that is just the core philosophy that Republicans have brought to this government. And while they're doing things like that, they're doing things like allowing their cabinet members to fly around on private jets to cushy conferences. Uh-huh. It makes me absolutely furious. And to watch this member of Congress, Lamar Smith, harp on one hand about government spending, but do nothing about these humanitarian crises or abuses of the taxpayer, just shows you where, you know, their bread is buttered, and that's with the top 1% in the corporations.
No kidding. We're speaking with Derek Crow. By the way, the website is electcrow with an E on the end, like Cameron Crow, electcrow.com. And electcrow is also a Twitter handle for the campaign running in Texas 21st District. How's it going so far? Are you getting out and shaking a lot of hands and kissing babies and stuff?
We are. I try to avoid, you know, the stereotypical kissing babies. I got a 3-year-old, so I get assaulted by toddlers all the time, which is pretty funny. But I'm absolutely loving this campaign. The people of the Hill Country and in Austin and San Antonio have been hungry for someone who will come out here and make an unapologetic case for progressive values. And I think that's really going to be the key to victory in this race. You know, we have a crowded primary in this race. But our unapologetic stance on progressive issues, I think, is the key to winning in a district like this. Because midterm elections are all about motivating the base and showing people that the party may have taken for granted for the past 10 years, that we are not taking them for granted and we're going to be their champion. We're campaigning on a very easy to understand platform of climate change action that's real and not just a bumper sticker, Medicare for all to get everyone the health care they deserve, $15 an hour minimum wage, and free college. And we're combining that with what I think the Democrats really need to pay more attention to, which is a real agenda to get rural America back on their feet. Mm. So because most of the population in this district is in the urban areas, there's a very large rural component and character to this district. And folks like Lamar Smith and Republicans generally are trying to gut all of the USDA programs that rural America depends on for economic development, things like broadband access, clean water access, even solid waste management and economic development funds. They're all on the chopping block under this horrible Trump budget. And Lamar Smith is just advocating for that budget like a cheerleader. And I think that's really going to damage them this year.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Now, the Trump campaign. It's an ongoing campaign, but the Trump administration and his rallies, their campaign rallies, they're paid for by his 2020 campaign. Go figure. But the administration just rolled out this tax plan that they claim will help middle class families. And every economist, every expert that I hear talking about it says that's a lie. It's an absolute lie.
It's an absolute lie. And I have to tell you, the fact that we're looking around for ways to cut corporate taxes even more when they're already avoiding hundreds of billions of dollars in taxes they should owe by stashing their profits overseas makes me absolutely crazy. That shows you what Donald Trump thinks of when he thinks of patriotism. He'll sit here and he'll attack NFL players for taking a knee over police brutality and the assaults on people of color and call that unpatriotic. But he's 100% fine with corporations and the 1% stashing their money in places that we can't get to so that they can enjoy those profits and not support the public structures that made their success and our common life together possible. So this Trump attempt to cut taxes, I think, really just kind of continues to unmask the agenda and unmask that rhetoric as just lies he's telling the American people to rile people up. He doesn't care about our common good.
No.
And this idea that corporations are paying too much in taxes is ludicrous. They should be paying much more. We ought to close those tax havens.
Absolutely. You know, Derek, I mentioned at the beginning when I was introducing you that we first met when you were working with Brave New Films and Rethink Afghanistan.
Right.
And here we are still in Afghanistan, and Trump is increasing troop levels, even though he campaigned on getting us out of these wars and not being a nation builder and being more of an isolationist. What do we do about Afghanistan?
We need to get our troops home. I mean, it's been pretty simple for the last more than a decade now that we have been trying to make some counterinsurgency strategy work in Afghanistan, and it was never going to work in the first place. And even if the folks thought it was going to work in the first place, they never committed the troops that their own doctrine said they ought to commit for that. So what we've just got here is a complete lack of courageous leadership and a complete unwillingness to level with people and tell them that something we've been up to and investing people's lives and money in for more than a decade has got to end. I mean, Afghanistan, we've been telling people that just around the corner is, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, and that's never materialized because the simple fact is the problems that we're facing in Afghanistan run much deeper than something you can get at with a military occupation. We ought to get those troops out of there. And the fact that the president and the Republicans and Congress will not stand up and just level with the American people about it shows that we need new leadership. And it just shows they're not serious about solving any of the problems we face internationally.
Now, okay, you said internationally. Not only are they not serious about it, they're downright scary. I don't know about you, but I've been losing sleep over the way Trump goes on Twitter against Kim Jong-un and his the juvenile way he's approaching someone with nukes, and he, you know, two madmen with their fingers on the nuclear button. This is a really frightening situation.
It's terrifying, and the reason it's terrifying to me is that the closest times we've ever come to actual nuclear exchanges in this country have not been from considered policies of a careful confrontation. It's been through accidents or misunderstandings or, you know, misinterpretations of data coming in from radar sites. We're on a precipice here, and we have someone who thinks it's fine to dance at the edge and make juvenile gestures like you're mentioning. Donald Trump is reacting to Kim Jong-il like he's, or Kim Jong-un, excuse me, as if he's, you know, an opponent on a reality television show.
Yeah.
When what he actually is someone who has his finger not only on a nuclear button, but also can give the order through just conventional weapons to kill hundreds of thousands of people in South Korea within 24 hours. And if Donald Trump can't be prevailed upon by some adults in the room to behave himself and get off Twitter and start taking these international crises seriously, the crisis mode that we have been in for the last 6 months is going to look like child's play. These folks have got to get serious about reining him in, even if that means impeaching him and removing him from office, because he is a danger to this country.
There is legislation to make it to say that a president can't unilaterally fire off nukes, which right now apparently he can, which makes it even scarier.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's terrifying. I mean, you should just think about what that means for separation of powers in this country. Just,
yes.
If you're going to get nerdy about it and step away from the thought of nuclear apocalypse, which ought to be keeping us all up at night, this idea that Congress supposedly has the power to declare war under the Constitution, yet the president can launch the total annihilation of not only another country but our own in the ensuing exchange without consulting anyone but himself, is completely insane. Especially when you see someone like Donald Trump with his finger on the button. And that just kind of points out the broader problem in Washington, in that we've treated the balance of power between Congress and the presidency essentially just as a partisan issue over the last 50 years. But we've got to get back to a place where Congress is always in an adversarial relationship of some kind with the executive, forcing the executive to justify themselves, instead of just cheerleading for our party when they happen to hold the White House. We've got to make sure that decisions like going to war or, God forbid, launching nuclear annihilation have a deliberative process behind them.
Without a doubt.
We can check those attempts by the executive if they get out of hand. And Donald Trump is a prime example of why you can't just trust the executive with that kind of power.
Derek Crow, you said it all. Electcrow.com, electcrow on Twitter. Derek Crow running in Texas 21st Congressional District. Thank you so much. We are just flat out of time. It is great to talk with you, sure. And thank you for running.
Thank you for having me on. I hope we do it again soon.
Me too.